This is James Butler of Sex Clock 5, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Acra.
On Monday, November 7th, tune in all sorts of creative community voices on 90.7 FM, including at 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show. Hear from Paul Tick about the town of Bethlehem's proposal to preserve historic farmland on the November ballot. We'll also hear more about the midterm elections, which end on Tuesday, November 8th, so get out and vote. 10 a.m. on the Afrosonic Taxi, there's all sorts of mambos. 3 p.m., there's all sorts of noises on the radio. 4 p.m., Kieran Riley hosts a WGXC afternoon show live from Western Massachusetts. And there's a midterm election special on the All Together Now show at 6 p.m. And then at 8 p.m., Winslow from Athens is live from Acre with his new Upon the Cypress Bough show. Music from Western Asia, North Africa, and Central Asia. And then Nick and Lisa from Palinville are live from Acre at 10 p.m. with their Radiant Point show on 90.7 FM, WGXC. Turn out for a sunset moonwalk at the Greenport Conservation Area on Wednesday, November 16th. 4:30 p.m. Columbia Land Conservancy leads the moonwalk over the trails of the Greenport Conservation Area, and participants will look up at the moon and constellations and discuss nocturnal adaptations by animals. Bring water, weather-appropriate clothing, a flashlight or headlamp, and it's recommended for children ages 5 through 12, but all are welcome at the sunset moonwalk at the Greenport Conservation Area. On Wednesday, November 16th, go to the WGXC community calendar for more information at wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Cochrane Media of Cairo, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
Who is community radio for?
It's for people.
You mean it's for the people?
What's the difference between people and the people?
People you see on the street are people. You can see them. You can't see the people. There's too many to see.
You can't see anything on the radio anyway.
That's what's great about radio. There's nothing to see.
That means you can drive at the same time you listen to the radio.
Do you think it's safe to operate a motor vehicle while listening to WGXC?
Is it safe to use power tools while listening to WGXC?
90.7 FM. WGXC.
And I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and we are joined via Zoom with Brandon Gaylord running for the 106th Assembly District. Is that right?
That's correct, yep.
Whoops, let's see. You're a little too loud in the board. I think you're okay now. The 106th Assembly District is it all of Columbia County and some of Dutchess County, or what is the district?
It's most. It's Columbia County minus the town of Ghent, Kinderhook, Stuyvesant, and Stockport.
And some of Dutchess County too, right?
Yeah, most of Dutchess County. It goes all the way down to town of Poughkeepsie, but on the west it misses Rhinebeck and Red Hook, and on the east it misses Amenia, Wissahic, and Dover. But then it goes all the way down to town of Poughkeepsie.
All right. So, Brandon Gaylord, why don't you introduce yourself to voters who... people like me have just seen your signs and don't know anything about you. So tell us why you're running, what your background is, and all that.
Sure. So thank you for having me on. So I'm not a politician. I'm a normal guy, school teacher up in Albany. I teach U.S. history. I'm raising my family with my wife in Chatham. We're both volunteer firefighters where we live, and we're very involved in our community. We love living in upstate New York. But we're finding that we're not.
Oops, you're cutting out again. It was all working until just a second ago. Let's see if... can you hear me? Yeah, we don't hear you again.
Yes, I can.
Now I can hear you again. Okay. So I think you were a volunteer firefighter was the last words we heard.
Okay, yeah. So my wife and I are both volunteer firefighters. I'm the chairman of the planning board in the town of Chatham, or in the village of Chatham where we live.
Oh, and there it goes again.
And I'm running for assembly because, again, New York State is a beautiful state.
All right. Better? No, it's breaking
can
up.
You hear me now?
It's break now. I can
hello,
hear
hello,
you.
Hello, hello, hello.
Let's try it again. Hello. Yes.
Now you can hear me?
Now we can. Okay. Yes.
Okay. Take
we've got a gremlin somewhere inside there. Sorry about that.
It's the Russians, I'm sure. just sort of summarizing. So we're a normal couple, normal family, just raising our son in Chatham. I'm trying to make it work, but it's becoming too expensive to live here for us. And we didn't really want to move. We didn't really want to leave. So I figured I might as well run for politics, see if I can change things and make it more affordable for our family and others to live in upstate New York. We're not very partisan. We're not, card-carrying members of any political party. We're just normal people who care about our community and want to make it work for us and work for everybody. So that's why I'm running for assembly.
Why did you get on the planning board originally?
I got asked to. So our town is getting is experiencing a shortage of younger people willing to do civic minded things in order to have a quorum in the planning board. So a lot of times if somebody was out of town, there was no quorum, there was no planning board, and a lot of the local processes got jammed up. And so I got asked, being sort of a gung-ho member of the community, to join. So I joined. It's been a lot of fun. It's given me a glimpse into sort of the inner workings a little bit, but that's why I joined.
I've been to some planning board meetings. I don't know if I'd say they were fun, but
relative, I suppose.
What has the experience been? Have you learned about the community?
Yeah, I have. It's been interesting. There have been projects that are coming to Chatham in particular where I live that are really exciting. And then there are projects that have galvanized support from the community one way or the other. So I can think of in particular a motel that was planned that was not very popular. And so seeing people from all different walks of life come together and sort of exercise their rights was really, really sort of the fun part. And forgive me, Tom, I'm a U.S. history teacher by trade. So I guess it is fun for me just given that. But it's been interesting to me to see the process. I sort of looked at things from afar being a history teacher, reading about it in books and then sort of digesting that and teaching it to my students, but actually getting involved and holding plans and going through code books and finding violations or laws or whatever, and learning about historic districts and all that sort of stuff. It's been very interesting and sort of filled in a lot of those gaps for me. And has really made me very, very interested in politics in the sense of wanting to move things from A to B to make things better for everybody.
And then tell us about your decision to run for assembly this year, I guess.
Yeah, so decision to run for assembly, again, we're at the point where we're fortunate enough, my wife and I both have college education. Our graduate degrees, we have good paying jobs or decent paying jobs. I'm a teacher. And we're in the position where we could move to another state, given that we're taxed so heavily in New York that it move. State Senate was never something that really appealed to me. Assembly seems the most local without being that local, but while also being state politics. I'm a big believer in the idea of localism. I know Tom De Pietro is as well, and we've had good conversations about this. The whole idea of giving back to your community is really valuable and important to me. And so I wanted to run for assembly, not because I looked at who's currently representing us and had some sort of negative connotations or thoughts. It was more of what's happening isn't working for my family, and I think that I can do a better job, and let me get in there and see if I can improve things.
So this is less about Dede Barrett and more about the state of New York, the state of the state of New York.
That's correct. Yeah. And I think one thing that should give voters a little bit of solace is that I think our race, and I'm going to speak for my opponent a little bit, has been a very, a race that's focused on the issues. There are races across the state where it's, vote for me because my opponent is, some ad hominem attack. And then it just gets kind of ugly. And so I don't look at Dede Barrett and then say, because she exists in that position, I'm going to run against her. I look at it and say, who's making these decisions? It's not really working for us. What's going on there? I reached out to her, didn't get a response. And I thought, that's not the way things should work. I bet I can do a better job. And so that's what prompted this.
It's interesting because I think just from our few moments talking here, you seem to be would you describe yourself as a moderate Republican?
Yeah, I mean, what I'm a firm believer in is that there's a division that exists. And I've spoken to a number of people about this. There's a division that exists in our current zeitgeist that really infuriates me. This idea of when I knock at the door and I've got ideas that maybe don't work for everybody, but they work for some. And I really want to have conversations with people. And people sometimes will shut me down and say, are you a Democrat or are you a Republican? I say, it doesn't matter. Can we talk about the issues and sort of see if there's some common ground? We may not agree on them, and that's fine. But can we have a conversation? And so I find myself sort of bridging that Democrat-Republican divide because I recognize that the more we race to our respective camps, the more we're going to stand divided. Somebody's profiting off that. Somebody stands to gain from us being divided. And what I want to do is say, we may not agree on every issue, and that's okay. But if we can agree that it's getting too expensive to live in New York, and in a lot of places, it's getting too dangerous, and those two things need to be addressed, if we can agree on that, then we can start to improve our state and address the other issues, at a later time. But we need to come together. We have to start healing our communities because they're incredibly fractured and divided.
So that answers my question perfectly. And what I was leading to was your election seems like one of the few elections where there's basically two moderate candidates from the party. We thought Dede Barrett was going to be primaried. There's already the Hudson mayor, Kamal Johnson, is talking about primarying her in the next election already. And there were protests from the left at her office in the past year over the clean slate issue. I think maybe affordable housing. But this is one of the few races. I mean, more of the races are two people on the extreme or farther from the middle. But you guys are both fairly closer in the middle than most other elections this fall.
Yeah, I would say, I'm certainly biased. I think I'm more in the middle than she is, but that's, neither here nor there. And certainly to be expected, right? But look, the thing I would say is in the last 16 years, this district has had two different people represent them. It had Molinaro represent them for 6 years. It's had Dede Barrett for 10. I don't plan on being in office nearly as long as my opponent currently is in office. I believe in term limits. I believe we need to make the state more affordable. I believe we need to make it safer. I think those three issues push me pretty far toward the middle in some respects. And I think my opponents, I'm assuming opposite viewpoint on those, push her further to one side. And I hope the voters see that.
Yeah. So term limits, you are in favor of voters not being able to have a choice.
I'm in favor of... of dollars from state committees, not from individuals, for my reelection efforts. And incumbency rate for Congress, for example, which I'm not running for, is 95%. Incumbency rate for any race is significantly higher than it is for the challenger. And so once you're in, there's an inherent built-in advantage, whether it's funding, name recognition, the fact that Dede Barrett can go to any event, call the press and say, hey, I'm going to give a short little speech. Would you like to be here? And the press will gladly jump at it. I can do the same. And the press will say, who are you and why are you calling? And so there's a built-in advantage. I don't believe that It's denying voters anything. I think that at a certain point, you look at people who have been in the assembly longer than I've been alive and you say, okay, maybe we need to change things up and maybe we need to ask people to step down the way that George Washington did. I mean, it's only a good example that we have passed down from our founding 250 years ago.
Yeah, I guess the question is if in 2026, a voter wants to vote for Brandon Gaylord and term limits say Brandon Gaylord can't run, that is denying the voter's wish. That's what my point was.
Yeah, and I guess when I say term limits, what I would be more in favor of is the actual candidate stepping down. What I see all too often is members of the Assembly or State Senate, like I said, who have been there for, I'm 36. I know there are people who have been there 40 plus years. And at 40 plus years, you've got such an incumbency advantage that I would argue the voters are not given a fair shot at electing somebody who has fresh and new ideas with the same opportunity and outcome that they can expect simply by virtue of you being an incumbent. My opponent typically gets anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million given to her by the state committee, which, good for her, but they do that typically because she's a known quantity. They can put her on TV and people typically know her. And I would argue that stifles ideas from the left. If you want Mayor Kamal Johnson to run for assembly, you should be in favor of Dee Dee Barrett saying, I do believe in term limits and I'm going to step down. By not doing that, she's only limiting somebody who's got potentially the ambition to run for that seat.
So you're talking more about the Chris Gibson model of term limits, term limiting yourself rather than the government mandating that you can't vote for this certain candidate.
Yeah, and Tom, thank you for clarifying that. Absolutely. I'm much more libertarian than my original answer sounded in all respects.
Yeah. And I don't mean to hijack because term limits, I was looking at your issues pages among the major issues. So I'd like you to speak to what you think are the major issues in this campaign.
Yeah. So major issues, rising cost of living is number one. You can just generalize it as the economy. I talk to people every single day. I've knocked on probably 14,000 doors at this point. Republicans and Democrats alike are telling me that the economy is the number one issue. I hear all the time, good luck to you, but we're moving. We're heading to the Carolinas or wherever else. People can't afford in a lot of places to heat their homes. In Columbia County, that's becoming more and more true, especially if you are lower income, you heat your home with kerosene. In Dutchess County, people can't afford their electric bills. Central Hudson is charging people in some places $900 a month or higher for their electric bill. And it's just, and wages are stagnant, right? If everybody's making $1 million a year, maybe we celebrate. But the fact that wages are more or less stagnant while costs are going up is creating a really big problem. So the economy is number one, and then crime is number two. And those two are by far the biggest issues.
And let's go through, though, I guess one at a time. What can someone in the state assembly do about inflation, which is worldwide after the pandemic? Almost every country in the world has, a much larger inflation than it usually does. So what can someone in the minority in the assembly do about that?
Yeah, it's a great question. We need to actually start pushing back against an ever-increasing budget. So our state budget is more than double the size of Florida's state budget, and they have 2 million more residents than us. There's no reason why New York government needs to be taking as much money as it does. I just was speaking to somebody else in an interview before this, and I said, we lose every year more residents than any other state in the country except California. Our net migration is greater than any other state except California, and yet our budget keeps increasing. And so those of us who stay are contributing to a bigger and bigger pie in terms of tax dollars, which means that we keep less and less in terms of real dollars. So we've got to start bringing spending under control. It just has to happen. And in the minority, it's going to be tough being realistic. If I had the magic wand and I could do whatever I want, it'd be very easy. But in the minority, you have to get creative. And so I think one way to do this is tax breaks for first responders, which I'm very much in favor for. Our first responders obviously are hit tremendously hard during COVID and then, before COVID and since COVID. And a lot of our small towns in the 106th district are made up of volunteer fire, part-time police, part-time EMS. And as soon as those people especially start leaving those communities, it's going to be disastrous for those areas. So
the EMS crisis,
tax break for those people rather than the $200. The EMS crisis
is already here, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And I'm volunteer fire, and I can tell you what happens with fire, at least, and this is true with other departments, is that when we start closing them and when we have a crisis like we do with EMS, you start having to rely on mutual aid, meaning they come from further and further away. So that means that if you're, I don't know, exposed to something like fentanyl or whatever, or you just have a regular EMS issue, you might be waiting minutes longer than you should be, 5 or 10 minutes, which can make the difference, especially in an emergency. A fire doubles in size every 30 seconds. So if you're waiting an extra 5 minutes for the fire department to get there, that's the difference between your house being saved and your house being gone. And so that would be one way to start to bring down the cost. And then it's just a matter of public pushback against raising the rates that everyday New Yorkers are paying for their taxes.
So are there specific things that Albany should have voted on in the past legislature session that could have helped citizens now?
You know, not that I'm satisfied with. I mean, there are tax credits that could be done. There's a, I'd say the only exception to that is there's a veterans property tax exemption that is a 100% property tax exemption for fully disabled veterans, which I've never spoken to anybody who said that wasn't a great Senate. It's been tabled in the assembly, so it hasn't gone anywhere. That's something that I would like to see move forward. You know, how many veterans is that going to impact? Probably not that many, but I think it's a good step in the right direction, and it's something that I would like to see move forward. Veterans is another issue where we really don't do enough in this state. I think we're one of the lowest, maybe even the lowest state in terms of our population being veterans. In terms of raw numbers, we have a lot, but in terms of the percentage of our population, veterans are choosing to live anywhere other than New York, and that's a shame.
And then you said crime was your second major issue. What would you want to do about that?
The bail reform that was implemented was perhaps, and this is me being in the middle, Tom, was perhaps well-intentioned. And I've spoken to a number of public defenders who have said, you know, if you get arrested and you have to languish in jail for a year or longer while you wait for your trial, that's obviously unfair and not good. And I agree. But what's happening now is sort of the exact opposite. Nobody's staying in jail. And so you've got communities that are being terrorized across the state. I'm doing this interview in the town of Poughkeepsie right now. And just a couple of weeks ago, right up the road at Marist, or right near Marist, father was visiting his son at college and walking down the hotel lobby, and some guy hopped up on drugs who should not have been out of jail, fires 30 rounds and executes this man just broad daylight. And that was that. And so crime is really starting to come into our communities quicker than I think a lot of people realize. And so again, bail reform, probably good intention, but misses the mark. Judges need to have judicial discretion to be able to lock people up and not offer them bail if they don't want to.
Yeah, I would push back and say it's not true that no one is being held, because there are still people getting bail. But New York is the only state in the country that doesn't have the judicial discretion to hold someone because of safety issues. I think I'm wording that wrong, but I'm surprised to hear a Republican say that they are in favor of holding someone in jail who is innocent, because you're innocent until you're proven guilty. And so these people who are getting bail or not getting bail are considered innocent by the courts.
What I'm hearing from, so I didn't say I wanted people held who were innocent. What I'm saying is what we're doing now is we've stripped judges, and this is coming from a public defender friend of mine in Rensselaer County. We've stripped, we'll get arrested, and unless it's an extremely serious offense, they get let right out. So murder and all these other things, right? You're not getting bailed, right? But a lot of these sort of lower level and even mid-level, I would argue mid-level crimes, people are getting let right out. And so there are people who are committing crimes in places like the city who are saying thank you to the bail reform laws. And there are stories, I think, in the New York Post about this. And you know, it's certainly not making any communities any safer. You can argue sort of from the libertarian ACLU standpoint that bail reform is probably well-intentioned, which I agree it was. But I think what we need to do is we need to empower judges to be able to exercise judicial discretion to say, this is the first offense for this person. I don't know that bail is really necessary. Let's, you know, they can be released on their own recognizance, or this person is a career, you know, violator of these laws. We need to actually exercise some discretion here and set bail for them. And judges don't have that ability right now. And I think that's a problem.
So I'll ask the question again, because I don't think you, I mean, I think you gave a great answer about what the issues are, but I'm asking about if these people that you're talking about are innocent. They are considered innocent by the courts. They are not guilty because they have not been found guilty yet. So you're talking about putting people in jails who are innocent, considered innocent by the court. And that seems not to be a normal value that Republicans used to hold.
I think that what used to be the case was that you used to rely on the case that police and detectives made, and then you used to be able to, society used to be able to expect people to be locked up until their trial, incarcerated in some sort of jail until their trial. That's not, by and large, happening anymore, at least not to the same extent. And I think that what's scary about that is that if everybody's going to be let go, if people are going to be arrested and let right out, we're relying on people who possibly committed these crimes, according to police, or maybe likely or probably or whatever it was, and certainly not proven yet. We're relying on them to come back for their scheduled court date and hope that they show up and don't commit any crimes in the interim. And I'm saying that what we've seen with the crime increases in New York City in particular are tragic. I mean, the people getting pushed on the subways, the people experiencing random acts of violence in New York City, I think speaks to the problems that are associated with bail reform. And like, I don't want anybody in jail who is innocent, right? And I think that that's a terrible, terrible thing. At the same time, what happened with bail reform is significantly worse than the individual here or there who gets incarcerated for a crime that they didn't commit. The discovery phase of judicial of bail reform alone is disastrous and needs to be reformed. And so I think it's a touchy issue, but that's where I stand on it. Good question, Tom.
A couple other questions we always ask of people running for assembly or state senate. Would you bring a bill that mandates that all towns have some sort of web stream of their meetings?
Amen to that. Yes, I would. I'm a history teacher. I'm a nerd on the content by nature. So the more people have access to what's going on in their state and local government, the better. And so I would very much be in favor of that. And I would encourage everybody to tune in whenever they can.
All right. You've got some other issues on your website, which we should mention is BrandonGaylord.com. And that we're speaking to Brandon Gaylord, who's running for the 106th Assembly District. What other issues do you want to talk about?
Those are the big ones. I think that the thing I'd like to leave voters with is, look, I'm very much new to politics. Tom is very good with his questions, and you know, I appreciate that. I respect that. I'm a normal guy. I'm a history teacher, just a family guy. Just trying to make the state better for my family and for everybody else. I have no hidden agenda. I'm not looking to serve in the assembly for 10 years.